So, why is it that awesome can be good and awful can be bad? It goes against some basic logic, you know, if having some awe is good, then being full of awe should be great, right? But that isn't the case. For those who don't already know, awe has its roots in fear. It comes from an old Norse word, agi, which meant simply fright. As awe found its way into Middle English, it began to be used by scholars and theologians to describe this feeling that didn't have a word before, at least not in English. When beholding the supreme, prophets experienced a terror that could only come from being in the presence of the most powerful being in the world. But it was tinged with a love, a reverence for the Almighty. From Who is Man? By renowned Jewish theologian Abraham Heschel. Awe is more than an emotion. It's a way of understanding, insight into a meaning greater than ourselves. The beginning of awe is wonder, and the beginning of wonder is awe. Awe is an intuition for the dignity of all things, a realization that not only are what they are, but also stand, however remotely, for something supreme. Awe is a sense of transcendence for the reference everywhere to mystery beyond all things. It enables us to perceive in the world intimations of the divine, to sense the small things, beginning of infinite significance, to sense the ultimate in the common and the simple, and to feel the rush of the passing of the stillness of the eternal. For my entire life, I can remember thinking about and longing for this sense of awe, the way that it's described there. I knew it had existed because I had read about it in so many different stories. It began with the Bible stories that I read in Sunday school, David standing up against Goliath with only a sling, Daniel remaining calm at the lion's den, or the many prophets that spoke directly to the face of God or one of his messengers. In Sunday school, if we were lucky enough to have a dedicated teacher, those stories could come alive. And the world would suddenly be open with new questions and countless new possibilities. Normally, I didn't like regular church as much as Sunday school, except for the singing. That's the only time when I was finally allowed to make some noise in this very solemn place. But one day, following church, bored out of my mind, flipping channels, trying to find anything that resembled a cartoon, I found church revival programs on TV. And this was something completely new. These people were convulsing from the Holy Spirit. They were collapsing from the Holy Spirit. Some were being thrown across the room or speaking in tongues. There was something incomprehensibly bigger out there. I mean, it could be experienced by these people. They were on TV, and that hadn't lied to me yet. God was real. I mean, he was out there and he was just waiting to know me and love me and be loved by me. So as we return to the summers and multi-generational services, I was actually excited for once to sit in the adult church. I listened as best I could to every word they said, waiting for this wisdom from God that was going to start my convulsions. If I was really lucky, maybe I would speak in tongues and really impress my parents and the people around me. Not only did I not get any divine messages, I was bored out of my mind. It was so bad. It was bad enough that all of these adults seemed to just spend hours and hours finding a different way to say, be nice and follow Jesus. Oh, but I would swear, they kept saying the same things week after week after week. The same verses and the same readings. But that couldn't be the case. I had to just be a stupid kid. My parents were smart. All the other adults here were smart. So I was probably doing something wrong. I was too young yet for confirmation, so I assumed that was holding me back. There would be secrets. I would learn them. But I wasn't going to wait until I turned 12, no. And up front, there was this huge altar with giant candles, a huge golden cross, probably 3 foot tall, and not only the biggest Bible I had ever seen, but probably the biggest book I've still ever seen to this day. If I could just get closer, maybe there would be my secrets. So, much to the surprise of my parents and our minister, I asked if I could volunteer to serve as an acolyte, lighting and extinguishing the candles, holding out the tray of the tiny grape juices, and sitting in front of the entire congregation throughout the entire service. I felt a little nervous about eyes upon me, but I still wasn't feeling anything exceptional. And worst of all, now my singing wasn't a part of the congregation. My crackly, high-pitched little voice didn't have any way to hide, and so I didn't even feel comfortable doing that anymore. From my seat, I could hear the entire congregation blended. But that wasn't quite the same either. Back in the pews, I could clearly hear my parents' voices next to me. I noticed who sang loudly and who sang sheepishly and who just didn't sing at all. If I was sitting close enough to them, I could hear that one person who hits vibrato every chance they get, and that one man who just somehow had a voice so deep, it shook my ribcage if I was sitting close enough to him. My search for awe had taken away something very important to me, something I didn't even realize was important to me until after it was gone. I wanted to leave it behind for the safety of the crowd. I wanted to give up the search for awe and the divine. But I had made a commitment to the church. Part of serving as an acolyte was 1 year of service. So as the summer came to a close and the church programs came out of hibernation, something amazing happened. From Khalil Gibran's The Garden of the Prophet. Oftentimes we call life bitter names, but only when we ourselves are bitter and dark, and we deem her empty and unprofitable, but only when the soul goes wandering in desolate places and the heart is drunken with the over-mindfulness of self. Life is deep and high and distant, and though only your vast vision can reach even her feet, yet she is near. And though only the breath of your breath reaches her heart, the shadow of your shadow crosses her face, and the echo of your faintest cry becomes a spring and an autumn in her breast. And life is veiled and hidden, even as your greater self is hidden and veiled. Yet when life speaks, all the winds become words. And when she speaks again, the smiles upon your lips and the tears in your eyes turn also into words. One Sunday, sitting in that giant church, I lit my candle, and I moved off to the side of the altar to take my position in my chair. But now, as the summer ended, behind me sat the entire choir. And as we began our first song, their joyful noise didn't just sound in my ears, it sounded through me, through my back and into my spine and directly into my brain. As they began this prepared choral hymn, they sang louder and more polished. And when that solo began, I was finally close enough to the singer that I could really appreciate the gift that they were offering. I wasn't just hearing music for once. I could feel it in my body, and I could feel it in my spirit. I could feel how much they cared for everyone there. And best yet, my loud little voice was able to join in again. That was always an amazing piece of church for me. It gave me a place where my singing could join in with others, especially when I didn't feel confident about my voice. Others were happy to lend their strength to me in this area that I felt so weak. And that's where we come back to fright. As beautiful as it was to be a part of facing that weakness every single Sunday, embracing it and enjoying it anyway, all of that required this tremendous amount of vulnerability. But that's where I found that divinity, that beauty between two people, between whole groups. When my colleagues or my classmates talk about their calling story, I get to hear stories of visions, of transcendent moments in nature, directly communing with the universe, prophets finding them in the world and telling them in plain English their call from the divine. And I usually just share my story about music hitting me in the back. But there's another piece of my call, and it's become a lot more clear during my internship with you all. After joining my first Unitarian Universalist Church, my wife Rachel and I laid low for the very first year. We didn't join any committees, we tried not to go to a lot of extracurriculars, while we decided if this was the group for us. But more than a year later, we finally decided to attend our first UU auction. And I've organized and attended so many auction fundraisers. I was dreading it. And I thought I had seen everything, every different way of organizing this. But then I saw something else. Their prices were way out of whack. Everything could be making so much more money for the church. Things had been supplanted with experiences, opportunities for new relationships to grow, and in these existing relationships to flourish. Instead of making money, this event was focused on building fellowship. Fundraising was an incidental addition to the whole process. I wasn't sure if I ever would get that chance for ministry, but I knew right then that if there was any church that it was going to happen in, this was the church that I would be able to serve as a minister for. It would be the one that values the connection of people over anything else. It values where I found God. We talk about it all the time in the worship services and our committee meetings and these various check-ins that we have, that value of connection with another person. Whether it's the hug when you're breaking down completely, or just a friendly smile to start your day. That ability to open up and be vulnerable and have an honest connection with someone comes so much easier to some than others. Just like singing, some are born with a natural gift. Some work hard every day for years just to hone their voice. And some struggle just to participate. Well, we can learn from those same lessons of congregational singing. Stand among the group. Be a part of it. Let their strength hold you, and let your strength hold them. Listen for the voices next to you and how you can harmonize with them or pick up cues from them. And most of all, open yourself up for something terrifying and beautiful that we can only make together. Please rise now in body or spirit as we sing our closing song, Joyful, Joyful, We Adore You, number 29 in your hymnal, and the words are on the screen. Together with the resolve to stop trying to reduce the incomprehensible to our own petty expectations, so that wonder, that sense of what is sacred, can find space to open up in our minds and illumine our lives. Love be with you.
And also with you.
Celebrant, if you would please extinguish the flame, and if you all would please join me in the words on your screen.
We extinguish this flame without the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again.
And now, if you would please join hands for our closing song. But as you do so, please take a moment to look your neighbors in the eye and tell them you are not alone.
Until we meet again, carry the flame of peace and love until